And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Tom Fornelli joins me. We did not get a chance to review the wreckage, so we are just going to do a checkup on all things college football with Tom during this off week, including some of our picks for the weekend, some of our picks for the playoff, Army-Navy, much, much more. Be sure that you're subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast. The Bowl Picks Bonanza begins next week, and enjoy Tom Fornelli. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, big week at CBS because we have the All-American team coming out. Tom Fornelli, my guest today, and I have both submitted our ballots. We will get to some of our selections a little bit later, but first, Tom, hello. We didn't get to review the wreckage, and I apologize for that. So how have you been doing since the traumatic selection Sunday?
just doing my best to recover.
Doing your best.
You take it one day at a time, put one foot in front of the other, and just try to get through the day.
I mean, they had a Chick-fil-A sponsorship for that show on a Sunday, and I'm sure that everybody on that four-hour show got nugget trays before. And you know what? I couldn't have Chick-fil-A. It was a Sunday. And I know how you feel about Chick-fil-A.
Well, it's day-old Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
because you know they got that on Saturday.
So where's your head at right now as we record on Wednesday?
First of all, 4 hour selection show.
Jeez.
I mean, I understand you're a 24-hour network and you have like 80 of them and you need to fill time, but a 4 hour selection show to pretty much name four teams. Come on, it was what I expected it to be. The only thing I had, I mean, I. As I've said on here and I've said in many places the last few weeks, I felt that Penn State should get the spot over Ohio State simply based on beating Ohio State and winning the conference. But I don't really have a problem with Ohio State getting the spot because Ohio State's really, really good. My prediction was that Ohio State would drop to four, though, as punishment for simply not winning the conference after Washington and Clemson had both won their conference on that Saturday. So I thought they would climb up, but they only decided to knock Ohio State down to three, which the only difference there is you wear a different color uniform and you don't have to face Alabama.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's in a way, because I think that the biggest discussion probably in that room on Sunday or Saturday night getting into Sunday was Penn State or Washington. And then they said, we'll just go with Washington, but we'll make them play Alabama.
Like, it was so weird hearing the selection committee chair, Kirby Hokut, come out and like try. And I heard him mention that there was a big difference in turnover margin where Penn State was 50th and Washington was near the top. You know, they talked about how Penn State was just looked non-competitive, was a quote from Heather Dinich against Michigan. Yeah. Like, you know what?
But remember, margin of victory is not something they take into consideration in college football playoff.
I just kind of felt like all those explanations were explanations for a decision that was already made, not necessarily the way they got to their decision.
They talk in circles.
Yeah.
And I think we could both admit that, you know, there have been radio interviews where we're on. And we've been asked questions that we maybe not don't have definitive opinions or answers for.
And you just kind of filibuster.
Just talk.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Kirby Hokut does a lot of during those interviews, where it's like you'll ask him a question and then he'll give you an answer. And then two questions later, he's giving you an answer that directly conflicts with the answer he gave to before. Because no matter what he says, it's an impossible job because when you're picking teams based on criteria that don't exist or moving around constantly, when there aren't any set rules and guidelines, there's really no right answer and there's no wrong answer.
I know. It is awful. I mean, it's great if you are wanting to keep...
It's frustrating as hell at the same time.
It's great if you want to make sure that you leave all your doors open as a college football decision maker, which, you know, in the spirit of the sport, that's very college football.
Yeah, it's part of the fabric of the sport.
Of the sport.
Yeah, is the fact that it's ridiculously dumb and nobody really knows. And it's because, let's be honest, you know, there are 128 teams and it's a sport you can only play once a week. So you got college basketball where there's what, 320 something?
351 is what we're working with right now.
351. Good Lord.
351. Yeah.
there's 351 teams, but you get that 68-team tournament at the end, and you can play multiple games a week.
And we've got like 20 teams per year that are ineligible for the postseason based on random small NCAA sanctions.
Exactly. So you pare the field down. Right. But with football, you've got 128 teams. And you've got to figure out a way to crown one of them as a champion. And there's really no logical way to do that when you can only play once a week and you can only play 13 games. And even if you go up to 14, 15, 16 games, if that was even possible, which I don't think they ever will, it still wouldn't be really realistic to actually crown the true champion in the way that we're used to seeing in professional sports, where you play a long regular season, then half the league gets in the playoffs, and then, you know, another 2 months of the sport go on and one team standing at the end. It's just not feasible with the sport. So it lends itself to this kind of stupidity, which at the same time, that stupidity, that mystery of not really knowing what anybody is looking for and there not being any set rules or guidelines, is what drives further interest in the sport.
I know.
We sit here, you and me, and then just fans at home with their friends, family at the bar, arguing about which team should be better or which team is better and which one should be in the playoff and which shouldn't be. And it just pisses everybody off and make them want to keep watching.
Like, opinions, baby. Right. Opinions. It's college football, man. Opinions in college football have been paired together forever.
College football exists to affirm your beliefs.
All right, so let me spin it like this. Everything that's happened has happened. If you're a Penn State fan, wouldn't you rather go to the Rose Bowl and play USC than get mollywopped by Alabama in Atlanta?
I think, I definitely think there's a very good – if you feel that way, I don't blame you. I mean, I'd rather be in the playoff because I think it's – better to say we're a playoff team. I think that, you know, I think that holds more weight. But no, I don't think going to Pasadena to play in the Rose Bowl in a huge, major, important bowl game against a team that you actually have somewhat of a chance to beat, although I'm leaning more USC in this matchup.
Sure.
Because it's like it's awesome to go to the playoff, but you know,
Alabama. Like,
hey, we get to go to Atlanta to play Alabama in Alabama's pretty much other home field.
Right.
And probably lose by 30. So, yeah.
Between SEC championships and Chick-fil-A kickoff games, this year's semifinal and next year's national championship, I think Alabama has a chance to rack up a lot of Marriott points in Atlanta over the next 2 years.
I don't, you know, they're building that new stadium there right next door. Alabama should just pay them to build Alabama its own locker room there.
it's probably
they're
already there.
It's worth the money. Just be like, here's $2 million or whatever. We want our own locker room, you know, with our logo painted, everything, and put some TVs and some lounge chairs in there. And, you know, we'll just use it when we need it.
Because, you know, next year, I don't think it's going to be ready for next year's opener. It might be ready for next year's title game or whenever the college football playoff national championship game is. I think that the stadium is supposed to be ready for that. I think it's
ready for the Falcons next year.
Wow. Okay. That means that the Chick-fil-A kickoff might be there, which means that would be the setting. Do you know what the Chick-fil-A kickoff is next year off the top of your head?
Oh, it's no.
It's Alabama, Florida State.
Yeah, that's who I knew it was. Alabama. I was trying to figure out which ACC team it was.
Yeah, it's the first time that Saban and Jimbo have faced each other.
Oh boy!
Oh, I'm already excited.
Until LSU fires Ed Orgeron after 3-4 start. And then Jimbo is once again, you know, rumored to leave for LSU.
I don't think he can go through that song and dance again.
If it keeps getting him a raise, he can go through it as many times as he wants.
That's true. All right, we will save our playoff breakdowns and our playoff previews for later. Let's real quickly looking ahead to Army and Navy. You got a banged up Navy team. You've got Army already bowl eligible. Are you jumping on board Army with the points, or are you going even further and going Army money line for our expert picks?
No. Army's going to be wearing awesome uniforms, And that's about as far as I'm willing to go. I think Navy's going to win, even banged up. They're probably going to cover too. Army was a great story this year because it got off to a really good and surprising start. And it kind of slowed down at the end, although it still finished 6-6. But I just think that football team wise, Navy played for the American Conference title. It's a really good football team because the American Conference is not a pushover conference. And they got their butts kicked by Temple, and they've suffered a lot of injuries. It's just, I feel like overall, Navy's just the better team. So I think that win streak is going to continue this season.
The win streak may continue. 8.5 is too many points. I think Army covers. I feel like I've been taking Army plus the points every single year that we've been picking it against the spread. It cashes a lot.
Yeah, and it's not horrible to not take the points with Navy lay the points with Navy this year, because Navy's defense has hemorrhaged points quite easily.
Yes. Not good. Heisman pick, we're going Lamar.
I've cast a vote, and I will say that I predict Lamar Jackson
will. Yeah, I was going Heisman pick. I didn't know if you did we discuss that you're a Heisman voter on the podcast?
I don't know, but I am.
Yeah.
And my vote was cast. And a couple of the people I voted for are finalists.
Ooh. So that means two of your three are finalists. Or maybe all three. Who knows?
Hey, you never know. You'll find out after the
results. Are you going to post it?
Yeah, I'll probably write something about explaining my ballot.
Because I saw the headline come through. Dennis Dodd wrote a story for CBSSports.com that said, my Heisman ballot. And I said, oh, Tom, don't break that rule.
Oh, no, Dennis.
Gave his up.
Yeah, Dennis gave his ballot up so he could write and talk about his pick. Whereas if you don't know, if you're a Heisman voter, you are not supposed to reveal your vote for fear of a jail term.
There are
armed guards that have been outside my home for 2 weeks now, ever since I got my ballot, that are just like, you better not say anything because we will arrest you. We will take you to jail. And I'm keeping my mouth shut.
You are very smart for that. I also know that Dennis Dodd probably doesn't actually have a ballot, or at least was not serious about writing his, because he put Trace McSorley number 3.
Dennis gave up his vote a few years ago when they first announced the policy that you couldn't talk about it anymore. And I remember he wrote a column about that.
Trace McSorley and that Penn State team, I am excited about for next year already. Is that premature?
Listen, Moxie Mayfield's coming back for another year at Oklahoma, which is great because I love my boy Moxie. But Moxie McSorley's coming up right behind him. He's coming for that Moxie crown.
He put together one hell of a finishing season. How much do you put into teams that finish strong? Do you often allow that to channel your looking ahead? Like when we start to put together the early, super early, way too early 2017 rankings, do you let yourself get fooled by bowl performances or the way they finish the season?
I try not to, but I mean, I'm sure it seeps in a little bit. It's just because you can't help but, next year we know USC is going to be probably a top 5 team in the preseason.
Playoff. Absolutely.
And
who knows? They could finish 8-4, but they're definitely top 5 preseason.
They're definitely going to be a top 5 team in the preseason polls. Penn State's probably going to be close to the top 15. I think Penn State's a team that gets not dropped. It'll finish the year in the top 10.
Gets disrespected.
Start next year in the top 15. Like, it'll be number 14. Meanwhile, like, Georgia or Tennessee will still be in the top 15 as well for some reason. I try not to let it affect my thinking, but it's impossible not to, because when teams finish strong, you just remember them being strong and thinking, hey, this is a team to look out for next year.
It's something that I've seen. Like, I can't help but hang my hat on seeing Penn State win 9 games in a row and put together very impressive second half performances multiple times. I've been a critic of this Penn State, this James Franklin Penn State era, and I've gotten a lot of laughs at that team's expense. But damn, if they didn't make some decent changes at halftimes of games there in the last month and come out and whoop ass in the second half. It was awesome to watch.
I'm not sure what the problem is when they have the entire week to prepare, why they can't come out making some of those adjustments. But you give them those 15 minutes at halftime, those boys put in work on that game plan, man. Just that's at the same time, though, when you look at that Penn State team and just the fact that the division it's in, if it finishes 8-4 next year, you're not surprised either.
That's true. And I mean, you need to have Mick Sorley not get figured out and shut down by opposing defenses with an entire offseason to prepare. Same with Saquon Barkley. Like, you don't want to have a Fournette year with Barkley where the headlines maybe don't match the total production because of injury or whatever. There's still a lot that could go right or wrong.
Yeah, and it's that. Just being in that division for anybody, it's going to be like, it's the new SEC West where it's like, yeah, hey, that team's going to be good, but they're probably going to lose four games.
God, there are a bucket full of teams with four or five losses in the SEC.
Yeah.
I asked
everybody, but Alabama has four losses at least.
Dude, I asked Jerry Palm on a video for Selection Sunday what was so special about Auburn, because we were talking about the Sugar Bowl, and he goes, nothing!
They just finished with the best record of all the other SEC teams. That's it.
Yeah.
They got blown out the least and were therefore the most impressive of the four-loss SEC contingent.
The real key to finishing strong in the SEC is just to get hot in October. Everyone remembers the team that wins like five straight in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
That's what Auburn does.
And also, it's the other thing that works to Auburn's favor, since it plays Alabama last.
It doesn't like get beat up.
When they get killed by Alabama, everybody's just like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. Who cares? They played really well before it.
Goodness gracious.
They're really good.
What do you think about Willie Taggart to Oregon?
I like it. I'm surprised. I didn't think that. I thought I felt the last week or so that I strongly felt PJ Fleck was going to end up staying at Western Michigan. And now that really looks like that's going to be the case. And, you know, there was when the Taggart interview news, when they were talking about Taggart being interviewed at first, there were a lot of people that were kind of just dismissing it as like the Rooney Rule type thing.
Oh, boo.
Because Oregon has that state rule. And I was like, no, you know what? I mean, that could make a lot of sense simply because he's familiar with the Pac-12 from his time at Stanford with Harbaugh. He's a really good recruiter, and that's the one thing that's really been slipping for Oregon. And as you've seen, the guy puts together a strong program. You know, he took over at Western Kentucky, which was not the greatest program, and was really building it up before he went to USF. He gets to USF, builds that up after Skip Holtz, and now, you know, they had a 10-win season, which I believe is their first 10-win season in program history. I think that's a really smart, really good fit for Oregon, and I think that the offense is probably going to change a little from what we're used to seeing into the Chip Kelly and into Helfrich. I think we're going to see a bit. It's still going to be spread, but it's probably not going to be – the tempo is probably going to change a little bit, and we might see a little more – power type of formations. You might see more tight ends, put it that way, than you're used to seeing in an Oregon offense. But I think overall it's a smart and it's a good hire, and hopefully it works out for Oregon, because I think if we can get this situation where Washington's good, Stanford's good, and Oregon are all good at the same time, and then USC's good, the Pac-12 becomes really fun to watch.
Really, really fun to watch. I like the hire a lot. I remember that Willie Taggart was listed by odds makers right in the Larry Fedora range, you know, mm-hmm. like third or fourth on the list for the LSU job. And, mm-hmm. you know, that tells me that at least odds makers, who are probably talking to coaching insiders and industry insiders like this guy. And just because he might not pass the Twitter approval rating, especially compared to PJ Fleck, doesn't mean that, you know, the folks on the inside are like, yo, so this guy is just straight out the Harbaugh house. Like, this guy was a star quarterback for Jack, assistant coach for Jack, and his Western Kentucky teams, his South Florida teams, they put up points, dog. Like, in the last year and a half, that Quentin Flowers, Marlon Mack combo in the backfield for South Florida would hang 60 points on you if you let them.
And my thing is, I think Willie needs to get a good defensive coordinator up there. And the good news is, you know, when you're coaching at teams like Western Kentucky or USF, when you're in group of five schools, it's really hard to put together a great defense simply because since you can't really recruit on the level of most Power Five schools, a lot of athletes, you know, the quote unquote athlete guys that if they go to a Power Five school, you know, you've already got your quarterback, you've got your running back, you know, you'll put him at linebacker, you'll put him at safety. Typically, your best players at the group of five schools, as far as talent are concerned, is you're putting them on offense.
Exactly.
And now at Oregon, if he's going to be able to recruit at a higher level, he's going to get more talent to put on his defense. So that's the one thing that you've concerned about with his USF, because that defense this year was dog doo-doo at USF. They've been not being able to outscore teams,
don't,
for that defense.
I don't. I don't think that the Bulls have had a great defense in a while. It's been the Big East. The last time I remember a really nasty South Florida defense, it was the Big East.
Yeah. So now that he's at Oregon, he'll be able to recruit a higher caliber of player. I think the defense will improve. Just get a good coordinator in there. But do you know who my favorite coaching hire of the offseason is so far, Chip?
Is it Mr. Brohm?
Yes. I love that hire for Purdue.
Talk to me about Mr. Jeff Brohm. Straight out, not the Harbaugh house, the Petrino house.
Yes, straight out the Petrino house. And as I wrote when they originally hired Daryl Hazel, is, you know, because a lot of the early returns when Purdue's job came open where they were interested in like different Ohio State and Michigan assistants, which was just, I hate that. I hate when the lower tier schools want to be like the blue chip schools, because you're never going to be like them. If you play the same style of them, guess what? They play the same style. They're just a lot better than you are.
Right.
So you need to be different. And Brohm is in that same vein of, you know, that same mold as Joe Tiller. When Joe Tiller came to Purdue and he brought the spread, which at the time nobody had ever heard of. It was this totally foreign concept that you only saw at Texas high schools. It's out in the West. And he tore the Big Ten's butt up with it. He was putting points up like crazy. And I feel like Brohm is that same kind of mold where he's coming in. And Western Kentucky, the thing about Brohm's offense at Western Kentucky is it's a few years ago when they had Doughty there, they were just like an air raid team, just chucking the ball over the field, putting up ridiculous passing numbers. But then Doughty's gone and they get new players in there and they completely changed up. Western Kentucky's offense under Brohm did everything, and it did everything well. So I feel like he's going to step into West Lafayette in a division of the Big Ten, which it has Wisconsin and it has Nebraska and it has Iowa, but they're not Michigan and Ohio State. There's room to climb in the Big Ten West. And now Purdue with that offense, it's probably not going to happen next year. I'm sure we'll see a step forward because Purdue's offense has not been good. But I feel like in 2 years from now, this is a team that could suddenly, in the Big Ten West, make a lot of noise. And if they could find any kind of defense, which, again, is my main concern with that hire, but that's not so much Brohm as much as it's just Purdue. If they can get a defense in there and combine that with his offense, that's a team that's in the Big Ten that is not, you know, it's not going to become a powerhouse or anything, but it's going to be the kind of team where every couple of years it could make a run at a division title. And I just think it's a great hire for Purdue, and it's about time they made that kind of hire again.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It is that one. So Tom Herman to Texas happened so quickly at such a pivotal time in the college football season that I couldn't even really have time to digest it. You know, Coach O getting promoted at LSU doesn't even feel like it's part of the coaching cycle. And I feel like things are getting calm, and I don't want to put it to bed, Tom, but are we close to like filling in the final dots? Like, is there another major job that's going to open?
Probably not at this point, because unless it's like an Indiana situation,
right, where scandal.
Yeah, there's something else that leads to it. I think that at this point, any coach that was going to be fired simply because he wasn't good enough would have been fired now. And I think that any coach that's going to leave a higher profile school for another larger job, those have all been filled. I mean, there is no Power Five coach that's going to leave for USF. It's not the same situation as Houston, where the money was there and the recruiting base was there, where if things were right, they could lure a Power Five coach away. And I just...
There hasn't been one Power 5 to Power 5 move.
No. And I don't think there's going to be, because now that Baylor and Oregon are filled. I mean, that the Matt Rhule hire, that came out the hell out of nowhere.
Good. Real quick on that. Couple minutes. What I feel like that falls into Tom Fornelli, if everyone else is zigging, you zag. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's a smart hire. I think it's a very interesting hire. And it was weird just because, I mean, there wasn't even a whisper of it, at least as far as I had heard. I had not heard Rhule's name even mentioned in line with that Purdue or the Baylor gig. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, Baylor's hired Matt Rhule. And it's like, oh, well, that's, I haven't even really been able to digest it because it's a tough gig because, you know, with everything that happened there in the last year, there's one player in their recruiting class right now.
Yes, one player in the 2017 class.
So Rhule apparently got a 7-year contract, and he's going to need all 7 of those years because it's not just that he has to build up with the lack of a recruiting class. It's he's going to have to recruit different players there. Now, the difference is, you know, the offense that he's run at Temple it's not the same as Baylor's, but it's not like a stodgy offense. It's, you know, they spread you out. It's a lot of option, read option, dude, that kind of stuff. It's the defense.
Phillip Walker and Jahad Thomas have been running zone read. Like they have been, when Temple has gotten loose, they can put up points.
Yeah. It's the offense isn't going to be the air raid type of stuff that Baylor's grown used to, or even it's probably unfair to even call Baylor's offense air raid. They run the ball a lot. But the offense is going to be similar enough to what you see from a lot of Big 12 offenses. The key there is what Matt Rhule specializes in is his defense. And I think that's the one thing that's really going to pay off for Baylor with this hire. If he could put together the kind of defenses he did at Temple where he wasn't able to recruit the kind of talent that he can potentially recruit to Baylor, that's going to be the one thing that sets them up because that's the one thing that just doesn't exist in the Big 12 outside of Oklahoma and Texas sometimes. There are no really strong defenses in that conference. So if he could put together a really strong defense, that's what's going to be the key for Baylor, which is what's ironic is because Baylor gained prominence by scoring 60 points a week. And now I think the one thing that's going to save the program is the fact that it's going to be big, you know,
but that's the thing is like you're moving. It's like the artist who's always trying to stay one step ahead. You know, if you're Baylor, you are going to ultimately lose like Art Briles was a pioneer and Robert Griffin's teams were awesome, but they also lost like 4 or 5 games. Like yes. Baylor's peak was not very long. It was just for a flash, and then it was gone. And so mm-hmm. now it's like, all right, back to square one. Let's go ahead and start building the other direction now that Texas has Shane Buechele out here chucking the ball 50 times a game. Now that Texas is doing it, we're screwed. Come on, let's get fullbacks. Come on, Matt. Matt, find all your fullbacks and tight ends. Let's go.
Just get fullbacks and plug some gaps.
Oh, baby. Oh, I'm cool. I'm cool with the Matt Rhule power run team.
Hell yeah. Do that.
Some thick boys. Oh, he is Tom Fornelli. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. Tom, thank you so much for your time. We will check back in next week. We will do the picks cast for the first weekend or section of bowl games. You cool with that?
Oh, I am cool with that.
Thanks.